Ain't no pretty other side. Ain't no way to understand the stupid words of pride. It would take an acrobat. I already tried all that, so I'm gonna let him fly. And things can move at such a pace. The second hand just waved goodbye. And know the light has left his face, but you can't recall just where.
From the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. The Bush administration's failure to prevent the September 11th attacks came under even fiercer scrutiny yesterday when it emerged that two veteran CIA counterterrorism experts were so frustrated in the summer of 2001 that they considered resigning and making public their fears about an imminent terrorist strike against U.S. targets. The shocking revelation showed that John McLaughlin, deputy to the CIA director George Tenet, had told the panel he was too worried that not enough was being done. According to this latest report, Mr. McLaughlin had felt a great tension, especially in June and July of 2001, between the incoming Bush's team need to get a grip on the terrorism issue and his own sense of urgency about the danger. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry wrapped up his vacation in Sun Valley on Wednesday and flew back to Washington to accept a key union endorsement and rally former rival Howard Dean and other party leaders behind his candidacy. Kerry is meeting privately Thursday with members of the Democratic National Committee, then speaking to the National Newspaper Publishers Association. The Democratic chiefs come together Thursday night to recognize Kerry as the new leader of the party and raise more than $10 million for the DNC's effort to defeat Bush. Kerry will be joined by former Presidents Carter and Clinton, 2000 Democratic nominee Al Gore, Democratic National Committee Chairman Terry McAuliffe, and all of his primary rivals except Dennis Kucinich and Carol Mosley Brown. Polls show most voters unhappy about Bush's handling of the economy and over his course in Iraq, and 2 days of public testimony before the independent commission investigating the September 11, 2001 attacks, along with the release earlier this week of a critical book by the president's former top counterterrorism advisor Richard Clark, that Bush slighted the war against terror to focus on Iraq, dovetails so closely with so many Democratic criticisms of the president that some party strategists believe this week's events could mark a turning point in public attitudes about the administration's national security record. Their entire presidency is based on whatever leadership they can point to as a result of September 11th, said one senior Democratic strategist familiar with the thinking inside the campaign of Massachusetts Senator John F. Kerry. If the credibility of that leadership is questioned, his entire presidency hangs in the balance.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Chocoholics seeking to indulge their passion this Easter will appreciate a British hotel chain's diet-busting chocolate sandwich, which boasts the added attraction of being dipped in batter and deep-fried. Ramona Jarvis introduced the delicacy last month and said on Wednesday the calorie-heavy dish had become the fastest-selling dessert on its menu. "We were surprised it has become so popular, although it is very tasty," said the chain's director of food and beverages, Debbie Walter. For a Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman Newsbreak is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Have you been chipped yet? A company called Applied Digital Solutions wants you to undergo a surgical procedure to implant a tiny RFID microchip in your arm. Why would you want to do this? Because radio frequency ID chips will eliminate the heavy burden of having to carry credit cards and remember your ATM numbers. Instead, your arm becomes your card and ID number. Simply run your arm under a scanner and your embedded radio chip sends a digital signal to the computer, allowing you to complete your transaction. ADS calls its microchip VeriPay. There's only one rational reason that ADS executives think we'll submit to this. They're insane. Insane, but serious. They insist that this technological leap is needed because many people lose their credit cards. VeriPay solves that problem, says a corporate PR flack, cheerfully noting that ADS's chip is subdermal and very difficult to lose. You don't leave it sitting in the back seat of a taxi, he said. Subdermal or not, your ID number still can be stolen by a geeky thief who rigs up a device to intercept your radio-transmitted number, then plays it back later to your ATM machine, emptying your account. If your number is stolen, or if you simply switch credit card companies or banks, what are you to do? No problem, says the PR guy. If you don't want it anymore, you can go to a doctor and have it removed. I call it an opt-out feature, he said gaily. Swell. Instead of simply calling your credit card company to cancel your card, you'd have to call a surgeon. This is progress? Still, ADS is banking on you to get chipped, as they cheerily put it, even offering a $50 discount to the first 100,000 people who sign up. This is Jim Hightower saying, by the way, the honchos of ADS are such business geniuses that the company's stock plummeted from $12 a share 3 years ago to about 40 cents today. I wouldn't entrust two bits to them, much less my arm.
What do you know? Someone's at the door. Hello?
Oh, no, a runaway lawnmower. It's going for the shag carpeting.
A runaway lawnmower. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a tougher, more impact-resistant floor with Plitanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Plitanium is better at withstanding the occasional dropped bowling ball or frozen turkey than building materials made of wood strands glued together. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
They caught it on tape. Sure enough, Condoleezza Rice, last night on NBC News, did you see the live interview that she did with Tom Brokaw? It was quite remarkable. I mean, she won't appear before the 9/11 Commission and testify under oath. Because when you testify, I'm assuming, because when you testify under oath, you can go to jail if you lie. But she will appear on the NBC Evening News with Tom Brokaw. And Condoleezza Rice last night said the following.
The president increased counterterrorism funding several-fold in order to be more aggressive.
He increased counterterrorism funding. It turns out this is a lie. It's just simply not true. Here are the actual statistics as reported back in 2002, in February of 2002, on the 28th of February 2002, by the New York Times. Just very straightforward story, just reporting the news. The first budget, the first actual full-year budget that the Bush administration put together was the fiscal year 2003, which is really the budget for the year that begins in 2002. You know, 2001, of course, was when they were inaugurated. So this is his first budget. And the New York Times reports, and I quote, that the Bush White House did not endorse FBI requests for $58 million for 149 new counterterrorism field agents, 200 intelligence analysts, and 54 additional translators, end quote. Now, not only did the Bush administration not endorse, see, these were the suggestions that had, these were from the previous, the Clinton budget. Not only did the Bush administration say, no, we don't need those stinking $58 million for 149 new counterterrorism field agents, 200 new intelligence analysts, and 54 additional translators. We don't need that stuff. Come on. We know the problem isn't terrorism. We know the problem is Star Wars. What Donald Rumsfeld was making $1 million a year or thereabouts lobbying for years before he became Secretary of Defense, and all these guys, you know, with their connections to the dreaded military-industrial complex. But they really are. You know, you look at the bios of these guys. I mean, you know, one of the biggest being Halliburton, of course. No, we needed Star Wars. That's what we needed. That was the issue. Star Wars, and we need to take out Saddam Hussein. It was as if there was a time warp that the Bush 1 administration in 1992 went out of office, and all the 8 years of Bill Clinton's administration, there was just like this collective amnesia among these guys. And they came into office with Bush Jr. now, going to hit the ground running, fixing the mistakes his daddy made by not going after Saddam, you know, not finishing the war, and still fighting the Soviets, who didn't exist anymore. So anyhow, not only did they, quote, not endorse FBI requests for $58 million for 149 new counterterrorism field agents, 200 intelligence analysts, and 54 additional translators, but they also proposed, in their first budget, the Bush administration proposed, this was the budget, the very first one they laid, it proposed, I am not making this up. This is literally right out of here from the New York Times story. I quote, the Bush administration, quote, proposed a $65 million cut for the program that gives state and local counterterrorism grants, end quote. Not only did they not pick up the suggested increases in counterterrorism from the Clinton administration, they actually cut existing grants to states and local governments for counterterrorism efforts. Why? Because they had to pay for tax cuts for the rich. They had to cut back on the size of government. Just ask Grover Norquist. It's so important that we destroy government that we have to shrink it down to the size where we can drag it in the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub, as Grover Norquist told NPR's Mara Liasson back in 2002. The conservative philosophy of government. We don't need no stinking government. Once again, now that you know, the Bush administration's budget not only did not increase counterterrorism efforts, as the Clinton administration had recommended, but they actually cut them by $65 million. And here last night on NBC, Condoleezza Rice has the... Of course, she's not under oath before the 9/11 Commission. She says,
the president increased counterterrorism funding several-fold in order to be more aggressive.
And wait, there's more. Now George Bush says that the bad economy has been caused by 9/11. We'll get into that in the... I don't recall if that's scheduled for the second or third hour of our program today, but we're going to do, I believe it'll be the second hour. I want to get into the economy at some length. I just, you know, this is the headline. I'm not going to do a whole hour on this. I just had to share that with you. Condi Rice caught lying to Tom Brokaw and the Nation on NBC News. And it's just a bald-faced lie. I mean, it's just that simple. It's not a misstatement. It's not a misdirection. It's not an error. It's not a misjudgment. It's not something subject to interpretation. It is a lie. And the question then is, why won't she testify before the commission? Well, if you testify before the commission, you get put under oath. And the White House says, well, she can't testify before the commission because the commission is a creature of Congress, even though it was brought into power by the signing of the pen of the president. And there's this separation of powers. The executive branch is not answerable to Congress. No, no, the executive branch never testifies before Congress. As Richard Benveniste pointed out yesterday in his opening remarks to Richard Clark,
our hearings today will be asymmetrical in the sense that your counterpart, National Security Advisor Dr. Condoleezza Rice, will not appear because the White House has refused to allow her to testify here. As I pointed out yesterday, and I will point out in your presence,
he's just going to blow their argument apart here.
The Congressional Research Service of the Library of Congress looked at the issue of presidential advisors appearing before Congress, and even though we are not Congress ourselves, we are all out of government by the terms of the statute which creates us.
In other words, they were authorized by Congress.
I point out that you, on May the 3rd, 1994, as Deputy Assistant to the President for National Security, appeared before the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, talking about our policy in Haiti in open session. And you appeared as National Security Advisor before the Senate Committee on Government Affairs on September 11th, coincidentally, 1997. This report also has numerous other entries, including the appearance of former National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski on September 17, 1980. And may I say, without denigrating anybody and the importance of their prior appearances,
and this is the key. I mean, he's got all of these former executive branch, you know, presidential branch of government, national security advisors have testified before Congress on all these prior occasions about all sorts of things, and
none of those appearances was as important as the 9/11 inquiry in which you were appearing today.
And that important inquiry, of course, will not have Condoleezza Rice. She will not be put under oath. She'll show up on every television program and say what she says, but she will not be put under oath. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to quickly comment on this. And then I want to move along. I want to tell you about the latest absolute mind-boggling outrage of what's happening with our government and your tax dollars. 1-866-889-8894. Armand in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armand, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Would you repeat that statement that she said on Rokoff's?
It'll take me just a second. Why don't you go on for a second, and I got to bring it back up here. I've already knocked it off my computer.
What she said about terrorism.
Yeah, hang on just a second.
What was the sentence she said?
Here we go.
The president increased counterterrorism funding several-fold in order to be more aggressive.
That's what she said.
Okay, but you didn't hear the word in there, anti.
Wait a second. Let's play that again. You've got great ears, Armand. You're suggesting that she said that the president increased funding for terrorist activities, not for anti-terrorist activities.
Well, she may have said, if I heard it correctly, she said counter.
Oh, counterterrorism. Okay. Well, yeah.
But you didn't hear anti, did you?
Well, I think counterterrorism and anti-terrorism are recognized as the same thing.
Now, wait a minute. Not with the Norwellian administration. It's not. Never assume that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think
So maybe she was, in their perspective, they were funding counter to the previous funding of terrorism.
Yeah. Okay. Good point, Armand. I appreciate it. Well said. And I'm not going to split hairs that finely. There's plenty of blood on the floor in this situation to know that, you know, some crime has been committed here. 1-866-889-8894. Mark in Houston, Texas is on the line. Hey, Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, thank you. I got a question. With this 9/11 committee, if so, why don't they, can they subpoena Rice to testify on.
No, they can't. This is one of the things, when the commission was put into place, they specifically requested that the authorization include subpoena power, and the Republicans in Congress refused. Democrats, this was a big partisan battle. The Democrats wanted the 9/11 commission to have subpoena power. The Republicans said no, no way. The president, in fact, even threatened to veto the legislation that created this commission if it included subpoena power. I think that's one of the reasons why, although Bill Clinton is going to testify in public under oath, and Al Gore is going to testify in public and under oath, Dick Cheney and George W. Bush are both refusing to testify in public and under oath. Bush,
hide, maybe.
Who knows? I mean, Bush will only testify. He won't even testify to the whole commission. He'll only testify to the number one and number two guy. Number one guy, of course, is a former aide of his.
So. Okay, thank you. I appreciate your comment on it.
You're welcome. And that's not an absolute indictment. I mean, you know, the fact is the commission is 50-50, Republicans and Democrats, and there's some pretty heavy hitters there, some pretty high-level former Republicans and pretty high-level former Democrats. And, you know, I don't have a problem specifically with that, but this is really pushing it, folks. Condi Rice on NBC News lying to the American people. Now, do you think the vast liberal elite media is going to call her on it? It'll be interesting to see. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Wait until you hear this latest outrage from the United States government. Stay tuned.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
He loves it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, live coast to coast, where despair is not an option. Time to get active, my friends. Time to get out there, get involved. 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on the program, David in Grand Rapids, Michigan's on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Mr. Hartman. I got to tell you, you know, calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan, I don't know if you know anything about Grand Rapids. We have to live, eat, and breathe conservatism.
Well, you know, I know a lot about Grand Rapids. I was born there.
Oh, you poor man.
But, and
poor man.
You know, and I have a lot of relatives that still live in, you know, in Michigan and various areas. Anyhow, yeah, I know the area. And I'm very pleased that we're on the air on WTKG there.
Yes, we are. I just had a quick question for you. Does Condoleezza Rice really have a tanker named after her?
Yeah, she really does. It was called the Condoleezza Rice, or maybe it was just called the Condoleezza, and it's owned by her former employer. She was, of course, a consultant to the oil industry, it's not Exxon. It's the what's the other big company? Chevron. I believe it's
okay.
Chevron.
And
in fact, when she became either when she became National Security Advisor in January of 2001 or right after 9/11, and I frankly don't remember which it was, they renamed that tanker so that it wouldn't become an obvious target for terrorists who wanted to make a symbolic act. So as of this moment, there's a tanker that used to be called the Condoleezza Rice throughout the late 1990s and early 2000 all of 2000, early 2001, and no longer is. So
I see.
That's
well,
the
I apologize. As I was dialing, it sounded like you'd answer my question because, while I was listening and waiting to get on, you mentioned that, my question would have been, why can't they subpoena her? But you've already.
Yeah. They don't have the ability. They don't have the authority. That was a knockdown, drag-out battle back a year ago, and that's why, none of us remember. I mean, I focus on this stuff, but, I think the average American doesn't have any idea that they don't have subpoena power. It probably doesn't even occur to them,
I see. You're a breath of fresh air up here, Tom. You really are, and it's just, you tune in most of the local radio stations here for traffic information, and you just get, you get bombarded with Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, and then we've got local yokels up here trying to copy what they're doing, and so it's.
Well, I think they all have a place, David. I think I'm not opposed to right wing talk radio, and in fact I'd like to go back to the old days when we knew what the affiliations of our newspapers were. That it used to be a Democratic paper and a Republican paper in town. I mean, this goes back to the Jefferson Adams days. I think we just need to be more honest about our affiliations and our perspectives, and therefore I'm not really offended by that stuff. But I think that more liberal talk radio is coming because the public just wants balance. I mean, it's very simple. There half the people in America, half million more. more voted for Gore than Bush. And those people listen to the radio.
That is correct, myself included.
There you go.
I voted for Gore. I'm at the end of my lunch break, sir, and I just like to leave everybody with this thought. You know, it's amazing with the Patriot Act that we have before us now, and
got about 10 seconds, David.
Suggested violation of constitutional rights and things like that. If this act would have been created under the Clinton administration, you would have seen all the right-wing militia groups up here locking and loading and heading for the woods and saying how unconstitutional it is.
Well, a lot of them still are, actually. You know, it's amazing. You're absolutely right. I mean, there's a lot of things that have happened under this administration that if they'd happened under the Clinton administration, just would have, you know, not been possible. But there's a lot of people on the very, you know, conservatives with integrity on the right and liberals on the left who are equally concerned about the Patriot Act. David, thank you for the call. It's great to hear from you. Tom Hartman radio program here with you. 29 minutes past the hour. We'll be back.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. Here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. An overwhelming majority of 8,000 Caterpillar workers voted to authorize a strike this week after 4 months of negotiations. 96% of United Auto Workers members at 7 local unions in Illinois, Pennsylvania, Colorado, and Tennessee voted to support a strike after their current contract expires at midnight on March 31st. Caterpillar announced they have contingency plans similar to what they used during the mid-1990s strike to replace the packaging, shipping, and distribution workers and make sure customers continue receiving their products on time.
More than 3,000 workers employed by a major corporate farmer in California stand to gain millions of dollars in back pay thanks to a federal judge's ruling. It involves the D'Arrigo Brothers Company of Salinas and its use of company buses to haul farm workers to and from vegetable fields in need of harvest. Travel to the fields typically takes an hour or longer each day. The companies refuse to pay the workers for the time they've spent on their buses. The judge says they should have been paid. He'll determine the damage award on April 5th.
UAW members are upset in Chicago. The majority of workers at a Ford Motor Company's Chicago assembly plant signed a petition to the UAW International calling for a new contract election. UAW Local 551 is claiming widespread voter fraud tainted their March 16th election, contending their voter ledger books didn't add up, the ballot box wasn't locked, and it was left in an unsecured location.
Tokyo's Board of Education says it will discipline teachers who displayed unpatriotic behavior at high school graduations earlier this month. The board approved controversial rules late last year that require all teachers to stand and sing Japan's national anthem anytime it's played at a school-related event. For the graduation ceremonies, the board reportedly sent inspectors to make sure teachers complied. At least 150 did not. There is a pending lawsuit challenging the rule, and for now the board will probably just warn the teachers about the consequences of further unpatriotic displays, although a second violation may mean dismissal. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Last month's tepid employment report was bad enough. A total of 21,000 new jobs were created in February when the experts expected six times that number. But that only counts new full or part-time hires. The majority of job growth actually took place in the temp market, where 32,000 new jobs were reported for February. Higher growth in temping over long-term employment is troubling, even more so if sustained.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hart.
The clever makes the world weak, to pull it from its moorings, to farm the young wicked rules, to weather the coming star.
Speaking of wicked rules, yesterday we had on the program Jeffrey Smith, and talking about genetically modified organisms. And I want to start out with this. But the segue actually has to do with Medicare. But how is it? Here's the rhetorical question. How is it that every industrialized nation in the world has banned Monsanto's RBGH as unsafe, but it's legal and unlabeled in the United States? And the answer, in order for the FDA to determine if Monsanto's growth hormones were safe or not, Monsanto was required to submit a scientific report on that topic. One of Monsanto's researchers put the report together. Shortly after the report's submission, she left Monsanto and was hired by the Food and Drug Administration. Her first job for the FDA was to determine whether or not to approve the report that she had written. In short, Monsanto approved its own report. Assisting her was another former Monsanto researcher, deciding whether or not RBGH, derived milk should be labeled, fell under the jurisdiction of another FDA official, a fellow by the name of Michael Taylor, who also previously worked as a lawyer for Monsanto. Now, you know, further complicating this, of course, prior to being a Supreme Court judge who put George Bush in office, Clarence Thomas was Monsanto's lawyer. The U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, Ann Veneman, was on the board of directors of Monsanto's Calgene Corporation. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld was on the board of directors of Monsanto's Searle Pharmaceuticals. U.S. Secretary of Health Human Services Tommy Thompson received $50,000 in donations from Monsanto during his winning campaign for Wisconsin's governor. The two congressmen receiving the most donations from Monsanto during the last election were Larry Combes, chairman of the House Agricultural Committee, and Attorney General John Ashcroft. Now, you get the click on that. Now, let's move along to the Medicare bill, because this is in the news right now. All of a sudden, here we've got this report in the Wall Street Journal, of all places. We have this report a couple of days ago that the drug companies are going to be issuing these phony drug discount cards. This is not a government program. This is the government program comes in 2006, safely after the 2004 election. But just in time for the 2004 election, in June, you're going to receive, if you're on Medicare, you're going to receive a little plastic card in the mail that says, here's your discount card. You can take it into your pharmacy and you can get discounts. And the drug companies have voluntarily agreed, with a few subsidies from the government, they voluntarily agreed that card, that they'll give a discount if you show that card. And the discount has not been defined by the Medicare law, but they're all suggesting it's going to run somewhere between 15 and 25%. So people on Medicare are going to get this card. They go in to get their pharmacy. They show the card. The pharmacist says, oh, cool, you've got the card. We'll give you a discount. The pharmacist passes that discount back to the corporation, the drug company. So it's the drug company that's actually eating the discount. Now, that sounds like a decent thing, doesn't it? The drug companies are actually going to give a discount to people on Medicare. I mean, so what that it's going to go away in a year and a half? That it's just, you know, basically an election year ploy. It's still, I mean, you know, still, isn't it a nice thing? Well, it turns out, as the Wall Street Journal points out, the drug companies are getting ready for when that discount card goes into use. Quote, the prices of many widely used drugs have surged since President Bush first proposed a Medicare drug discount card in mid-2001. I'm quoting from the Wall Street Journal here. Prices for drugs the elderly use most often climb. The drugs that the elderly most often use climbed between nearly 3.5 times faster on average over the one-year period from January 2002 to January 2003 than the overall inflation rate. So they're jacking up the prices in anticipation of this. Now, you've heard about the Medicare guy who said that he was threatened, Richard Foster. He was threatened by his boss with being fired if he told the truth about the Medicare numbers. Now, his boss was a guy named Thomas Scully. What amazes me, what absolutely amazes me, is that nobody in the media has asked the question, who is Thomas Scully? I went back. This is an article in the newspaper of America's Physicians, AMED News, April 9th, 2001. Everyone loves to hate the HCFA, or so says the Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Tommy Thompson. So who should head the besieged Health Care Financing Administration? This is the group that oversees Medicare. Thomas A. Scully, quote, he aggressively sought it, said Tommy Thompson. And President Bush offered him the job. So here we've got Thomas Scully, the guy who threatened his underling with being fired, that he aggressively sought the job as head of the Health Care Financing Administration, the group that oversees Medicare. Now, what did he do before that? Before that, Scully earned $675,000 a year as a lobbyist for the hospital industry. He was president of the Federation of American Hospitals, representing 1,700 for-profit hospitals, the kind that Senator Bill Frist really kind of pioneered, buying out nonprofit hospitals, turning them for-profit, charging uninsured people higher prices, turned Bill Frist's family into multimillionaires. So here's this guy who's making $675,000 a year as a lobbyist for the hospital industry. And he decides, all of a sudden, to leave his two-thirds of a million-dollar-a-year job and go to work for the government for, what, probably $100,000 a year, $80,000 a year as a bureaucrat. Out of the goodness of his heart, he and Tommy Thompson says he aggressively sought it, this job. He sought out this job. What does he do? He puts together the Medicare bill that hands off, and now we turn it we discover more $150 billion more than we previously thought, not to you and me, not to recipients of Medicare, but to drug companies and for-profit hospital firms. And then what did he do? He just quit his job recently. I don't know if you noticed this. He has gone back to work as a lawyer and a lobbyist. I believe it's a lobbyist. He's gone back to work as a lawyer anyway for the private insurance in the healthcare industry. I'm looking for the exact quote here because I want to get it right. And while I'm finding that, let's let Billy from Santa Cruz come on and share his thoughts with us. Hey, Billy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom.
What's up?
Well, first of all, I want to talk about religion. We'll go to that in a second. Let's talk about what you're talking about.
Sure.
The fact is that when you're making $750,000 and you give that up to go to government, the whole point is, as you point out, he'll be going back at twice that original salary now that he's done their devil's work.
Well, we don't know.
I know, Tom. Maybe you don't know.
No,
I
mean,
what else I know,
that's
Tom.
The point. I don't want to say it unless I've got the actual numbers in front of me. But, you know,
that's why I call.
Yeah, there you go.
I can do the stuff you can't do, my friend.
Okay.
So here's the thing. Let's talk about Bush for a second.
Yeah.
We've learned now, you know, after Paul Allen and Dick Clark and you name it, what we know now is that the Bush administration has sold out our country's safety, has sold out our country's health with the, you know, the fact is that it's not possible anymore for anyone to defend George Bush.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Billy, I just found it. Let me just share this with you
all
really
right.
Quick. Within days of the bill's passage, this is the headline. Within days of bill's passage, Bush appointee Thomas Scully leaves administration for lobbying firm. That's the headline. This was before there was a scandal around
that. He accomplished what he came to do.
Exactly. Former director of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Thomas Scully, is now employed by Alston & Byrd, a firm that lobbies on behalf of pharma member Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah, what a shocker that is.
Boy, I'm just, you know, yeah.
All right, so see what you do every day is I guess valid and valuable, but you know, let's really look at the reality. The support of George Bush is not an intellectual exercise. It's a matter of faith at this point. It's a religious principle. That's what I said I want to talk about religion. You probably thought I was going to knock the Christians one more time. But no.
Heaven only knows.
But no.
Okay.
You know, that's the thing. I have officially given up arguing about George Bush.
Well, you know, if you go along with, you know, what was it, Paul's quote, I think it's in Corinthians someplace or something, you know, faith is belief in things unseen. And I know I'm mangling the quote, but yeah, you know, supporting George Bush these days has to be an article of faith because the jobs are unseen, the security is unseen,
exactly.
the protection of the country is unseen. I mean,
the man's quality.
The 100,000 cops that Bill Clinton put on the streets are now unseen. They've been cut out of the budget.
Our entire ability to trust each other, in other words, the peace in America has been completely fractured by the level of partisanship that results when you have a man who is, quote, a uniter, not a divider.
Yeah.
So the thing is, I just want to put Bush people on record. We now understand where you're coming from completely. Don't even try to argue the issues. It's about your character, and your character leaves us wanting more.
Yeah, well said, Billy. Thank you very much. 1-866-889-8894, 15 minutes before the hour. Billy in Santa Cruz always nails it solid. Hey, Dave in Humboldt County, California, is on the line. Welcome to the program, Dave.
Hey, good morning, Tom. One of the added deceptions that we're being faced with on the employment statistics, that is that if the Bush administration refuses to extend unemployment, if somebody is unemployed and their unemployment insurance runs out.
And they have been refusing to extend it, and a lot of people have been wondering why, and I know that you're just about to tell us all, because I know where you're going with this, Dave.
Well, they are then able to say the unemployment has gone down because there's not that many people drawing unemployment
That's
anymore.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
right.
And
that is just one of so many deceptions. The question that really I think, Tom, you could probably address better than any, how in a free country have we been so gullible? How have we allowed ourselves to be saddled with an administration like this?
We bought the rhetoric, you know, and Ronald Reagan, you know, God bless him, he actually believed this stuff. And a lot of people did. A lot of people of good conscience did. I have to say, back in the very early 1960s, literally when I was 13 years old, 1964, I believed this stuff. I mean, I went out there and I was supporting Barry Goldwater. There's a lot of people of good conscience, you know, I woke up within a few years, you know, by the time I was 17. But nonetheless, there's a lot of people of good conscience and good faith who read the writings, you know, who read John Stormer's None Dare Call It Treason, or who went back and read Russell Kirk's The Conservative Mind, or who listened to the writings of William F. Buckley, and didn't get it that the real agenda here was protecting corporate wealth and inherited wealth, period, and taking over government to do that, and really thought that there were some core principles that were important, and Reagan bought into that, and he was a very persuasive salesman. I mean, he used to sell for General Electric very effectively. He sold for the conservative agenda brilliantly, and you've got all these, and I think maybe even some of the conservative talk show hosts actually believe their rhetoric, and you've got all these people across America who have bought into what is essentially a religious myth. And we're now seeing the evidence of it. Since 1980, all the loss of all these jobs, the declining middle class, the evisceration of the middle class, the loss of health care, the number of uninsured people, the quality of life degrading, the end of the American dream. We're seeing it as the result of the, and that's why. I mean, you know, I'm assuming you weren't asking rhetorically. If you were, I'm sorry for the long answer.
Well, no, I still hear so many lunatics literally calling into these right-wing radio talk shows, waving their flag and saying, God bless Bush, how fortunate we are to have such a wonderful person as this. And we are being exploited out of senseless, and that's still the thinking that's coming out of the minds of an awful lot of people who apparently aren't capable of thinking very deeply.
Yeah, and the thing that you and I have to keep in mind, Dave, all of us have to keep in mind, is that by and large, the people calling into those talk shows and the people who are buying that hook, line, and sinker are good people of good conscience who think they're doing the right thing and really want the best for the United States. And even, I believe, I know a few of these people, and I've certainly met a lot of them, even those people who are, politicians on the right, you know, many of them are just obviously corporate shills. I mean, you look at Tom DeLay, you know, he's just, you know, with this new nonprofit that he's got that everybody's picking on him for because he's, you know, 25% of it's going to go to kids, 75% of it goes to the Republican Party. And, you know, Tom DeLay is obviously just, you know, basically you know, somebody who takes money and performs, you know, whatever you want to call that. But I think that there are some principled conservatives out there, and our job is to help them realize that their principles are not being put into place by the Republican Party these days, certainly not by this Bush administration, and that many of their principles are actually grounded in the same conceptualization of liberty and democracy in the United States as are people who call themselves liberals, that we share actually more in common than we have indifference.
Please stay with your own wonderful efforts to wise us up, huh?
I'll do it, Dave. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Here, now, the Bush administration has just given $9.5 million for these Medicaid ads, or Medicare ads, rather. You've seen these ads. Oh, it's the same Medicare. Don't worry. Yes, indeed, you're going to get the same benefits. Not true. The ads are deceptive. They are lies on their faces. I've documented in this show in the past. I'm not going to go through that whole list right now, although maybe we should. I don't know. But this, here's the point. $9.5 million of our money, every time you see one of these ads on TV, it's paid for with your tax dollars. And it's paid for through an ad firm called National Media Inc., which has made its name producing GOP attack ads. They were the media consultants for the Bush-Cheney 2004 campaign and previously for the Bush-Cheney 2000 campaign. And they have run ads for major pharmaceutical industry front groups. Do you think you're getting the truth from this administration? Even in the advertising. Ain't happening. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Stick around.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
New research documents the importance of evolution when diseases jump from animals to people. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A lot of people were worried last year about a brief outbreak of monkeypox, and there's concern now about a new outbreak of SARS. There's good reason for the attention. Each disease involves a nasty virus that jumped from animals to people and seriously threatens the health of anyone who gets infected. If a new disease can be kept from spreading, it can stop an epidemic in the short term, but health officials might need to pay more attention to the potential of some viruses to evolve once they enter the human population. A recent article in the journal Nature examines the importance of evolution in turning some viruses into serious threats to public health. Rustam Antia is a biologist at Emory University in Atlanta, and he worked on the study. He says people are part of the problem with these emerging diseases. In some cases, people are living in much closer proximity to animals that carry disease. In addition, crowded cities make it easier for the disease to spread from one person to another.
We have an enormous number of changes, and many of these changes lead to increased contact between humans, and things that lead to increased contact between humans will lead to this increased spread of existing pathogens and also the emergence of new pathogens.
Antia and his colleagues developed mathematical models that evaluate the risk of a virus mutating into a form that could cause an epidemic. Antia says this research might not produce immediate cures for diseases like SARS and monkeypox, but it does explain more about how infectious diseases spread, and that can lead to more effective methods of controlling them. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hart.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Alex Castellanos and his firm National Media. This is the group that put together the Medicare ads that you're seeing on TV right now that are saying, oh, it's the same Medicare, everything's fine with your tax dollars. They created ads for Citizens for Better Medicare, attacking the Clinton administration's Medicare prescription drug benefit in 1999. The advertising, which cost a reported $30 million, was mostly financed by Pharma, the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, a trade association of over 100 drug companies. At the same time, Castellanos was creating creating pro-Bush ads for the Republican National Committee and purchasing airtime for the Bush-Cheney 2000 campaign. The CMB ads were placed in the same markets as the RNC ads, the issue ads. Castellanos and national media also produced the negative attack ad about Democrat Al Gore in 2000 that subtly flashed the word rats across the screen. Remember the rats ad? Everybody was all upset. Hey, this is a subliminal advertising. There's a picture of Al Gore, and then they had an acronym, and it's RATS, and then just the words rats appeared on the screen, and it was there for less than a second or two. I mean, it was just wham. Most people didn't even notice it. But, of course, unconsciously, they saw the picture of Al Gore, they saw the word rats, they see the picture of Al Gore, and boom, in it goes, right? Speaking of rats, one of the folks in our chat room mentioned a website. I just checked it out. It's a hoot. www.linesocialistweasels.com. You'll find it very entertaining. And with regard to the chat room, I want to mention those of you who listen regularly and participate in the chat room, drop in there. Our chat room is hosted on CompuServe. Up until this point, it's been in a New Age spirituality forum. We're moving to the Democratic forum, which is a more appropriate place. You know, one of the political forums. There's not an independent one. There's Democrats or Republicans, and so I picked the Democrats rather arbitrarily. I am not a Democrat, but, you know, moving along. So that's where we'll be. Check it out. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today, or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. The Bush administration's failure to prevent the September 11th attacks came under even fiercer scrutiny yesterday when it emerged that two veteran CIA counterterrorism experts were so frustrated in the summer of 2001 that they considered resigning and making public their fears about an imminent terrorist strike against U.S. targets. The shocking revelations show that John McLaughlin, deputy to the CIA director George Tenet, had told the panel he was too worried that not enough was being done. According to this latest report, Mr. McLaughlin had felt a great tension, especially in June and July of 2001, between the incoming Bush's team need to get a grip on the terrorism issue and his own sense of urgency about the danger. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry wrapped up his vacation in Sun Valley on Wednesday and flew back to Washington to accept a key union endorsement and rally former rival Howard Dean and other party leaders behind his candidacy. Kerry is meeting privately Thursday with members of the Democratic National Committee, then speaking to the National Newspaper Publishers Association. The Democratic chiefs come together Thursday night to recognize Kerry as the new leader of the party and raise more than $10 million for the DNC's effort to defeat Bush. Kerry will be joined by former Presidents Carter and Clinton, 2000 Democratic nominee Al Gore, Democratic National Committee Chairman Terry McAuliffe, and all of his primary rivals except Dennis Kucinich and Carol Mosley Brown. Polls show most voters unhappy about Bush's handling of the economy and over his course in Iraq, and 2 days of public testimony before the independent commission investigating the September 11, 2001 attacks, along with the release earlier this week of a critical book by the president's former top counterterrorism advisor Richard Clark, that Bush slighted the war against terror to focus on Iraq, dovetails so closely with so many Democratic criticisms of the president that some party strategists believe this week's events could mark a turning point in public attitudes about the administration's national security record. Their entire presidency is based on whatever leadership they can point to as a result of September 11th, said one senior Democratic strategist familiar with the thinking inside the campaign of Massachusetts Senator John F. Kerry. If the credibility of that leadership is questioned, his entire presidency hangs in the balance.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Chocoholics seeking to indulge their passion this Easter will appreciate a British hotel chain's diet-busting chocolate sandwich, which boasts the added attraction of being dipped in batter and deep-fried. Ramona Jarvis introduced the delicacy last month and said on Wednesday the calorie-heavy dish had become the fastest-selling dessert on its menu. "We were surprised it has become so popular, although it is very tasty," said the chain's director of food and beverages, Debbie Walter. For a Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Pundits and other political cynics scoff at citizens' efforts to reform America's money-corrupted political process, saying it's as futile as trying to teach table manners to a hog. The effort wears you out, and it only annoys the hog. That's cute, but if the cynics would only lift their eyes from their myopic focus on Washington, they would see something big taking place in such diverse states as Maine and Arizona. Citizens in both places have already passed grassroots initiatives providing for dramatic reform, public financing of elections. These clean election initiatives give candidates of any party the chance to finance both their primary and general election campaigns with public funds, provided they forego taking special interest money. Not only does this help get corrupt money out of the process, but it also means a regular person can run for office again, since a school teacher, taxi driver, farmer, shopkeeper, steelworker, or anyone else has access to a pool of money to make them financially competitive with the incumbents. Maine and Arizona have run two election cycles under clean money laws, and the results would warm the cockles of the coldest cynic's heart. There have been more challengers to incumbents than before, with more women, Latinos, and Native Americans running and winning. Half of the challengers using the clean money option say they would not have run without it. Because this system creates more choices, offering fresh faces and new ideas, voter turnout is ratcheting upward. And here's the big one. Public financing is working. 59% of Maine's legislators and 36% of those in Arizona have now been elected without taking any tainted money. And publicly funded candidates in Arizona last year won 7 of 9 statewide offices, including the governor and attorney general. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you want clean elections, call Public Campaign, 202-293-0222.
I'll just see who that is then.
Oh no! South American killer bees! They're going for my eye!
A swarm of killer bees. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a better looking roof with Plitanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Other roof sheathing materials can swell at the edges, creating an unsightly checkerboard pattern under your shingles. Plitanium roofs provide a more uniform surface. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Hi, welcome back, my friends. Signs of spring. It's raining here in the People's Republic of Vermont. That's big news. It was 20 below zero. Well, it was 10 degrees below zero. It was 20 below about a month ago. It was 10 degrees below zero 2 days ago. It's up to 40 degrees now. Here's 10 ways. Now, pardon me for being provincial, but this is Vermont's such a cool place to live. I'm having a great time here. 10 ways Vermonters can tell that spring is just around the corner. Number 10. Skiers miss work on sunny afternoons. Number 9, the sap bucket sightings increase, and the smoke smells sweet. They're making maple syrup here. I remember when we first moved here 8 or 9 years ago, there was a big scandal. I mean, this was a big crime in the state, huge crime. It was in the front page of the newspapers for must have been a week. Now, this guy, he had this trial that lasted like 4 days, and all these people testified and stuff. They threw him in jail. They sent him off to prison. What had he done? He was diluting maple syrup with cane sugar. He was doing it on a fairly large scale, thousands of gallons. But nonetheless, that's a serious crime here. Number eight, children are walking through the snow wearing shorts. Yes, we actually, a week or two ago, it got up above 30. We got just a little below 40, around 35, 36. And Louise and I walked into town, and there were teenagers running around in short-sleeve shirts and shorts. It was a sunny day. Number seven, potholes reappear as the snow melts out of the ruts. Number six, the golfers are caught swinging their clubs. Number five, you forget why you were upset at town meeting. That's something you'd have to be a New Englander to get. We actually have direct democracy here to a large extent. Number four, walking on lakes becomes dangerous. I remember when we lived in New Hampshire back in the 1970s and early 1980s, there was always a lottery on which day Stinson Lake, we used to live on this lake, would thaw. And one day it was on my birthday, on May 7th, and so, eureka. Anyhow, walking on lakes becomes dangerous. Number three, you're driving to work in daylight, and we're so far up north here that in the middle of the winter, in December, the sun doesn't come up until 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. It goes down at 4 in the afternoon. It's incredible. And number two, legislators get grumpy and talk about adjournments. Seriously, that's because Vermont's legislature only runs from January through March. It's a bunch of part-timers. We don't have professional politicians in this state, except for the governor and lieutenant governor and attorney general. Number one, your car is covered with mud instead of salt. So I know it's not the hottest political news of the year, but I thought it was something of interest. George Bush says he has figured out where our jobs went. This is absolutely mind-boggling, my friends. George Bush, on March 11th, this was, a couple of weeks ago, said over a million jobs were lost because of that attack. That attack, of course, being 9/11. And, in fact, he's repeated that several times. He said that on March 11th, and then on the 16th of and then back on March 16th, a week later, before the United States Chamber of Commerce, he said, and I quote, "We've overcome an attack on our country, an attack which affected our economy. They estimate over a million jobs were lost after the attacks of September 11th. A million jobs, Mr. President. Well, the Bureau of National Affairs decided to look into this. And they went back to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Peter Batansky, the senior vice president, who actually did a study on this. And I'll give you the results on that in just a minute. It's really quite remarkable. First Harry in Ann Arbor has been patiently sitting on hold here. We'll pick up his call. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program today. Hey, Harry, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom.
I assume you're listening on WSDS there in Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
Great. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I was thinking, which isn't good. If I was a...
Go ahead, Harry.
Bin Laden, if I would have been Laden Brain Trust, who would I want to be our next president to help in running down the country?
Well, Al-Qaeda has already endorsed George Bush.
And I've come to the conclusion that they would want George Bush.
Yeah.
Because giving our country four more years of George Bush and his privatization and all that stuff and tearing down the country instead of unifying the people to separate the people and give the haves more haves and the have-nots less have-nots. If I were a terrorist think tanker, I would definitely want George Bush.
Yeah, thank you, Harry. Well said. And I actually read the story last week. I don't have it right here in front of me right now, but I read it on the air last week, where one of the spokespeople for Al-Qaeda actually said that they didn't use the word endorse, but they hope that George Bush is president because he's a worthy adversary or something to that effect. In other words, they want to continue this thing. You know, as long as there's a fight going on, they've got a dog in the fight. If you, anyhow, Roberta in New Mexico is on the line, 13 minutes past the hour. Hey, Roberta, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. A couple of things. Have you noticed even Machiavelli set limits? These avarice and power junkies have exceeded even those.
I know, you know,
we mentioned Halliburton. I don't know if you know, but I met a friend at the post office the other day, and he told me, he works in Los Alamos, and he told me that Halliburton is up there recruiting workers to go for the reconstruction at $160,000 with the first $80,000 tax-free. So,
tax-free? How do you do that?
The first, yeah, that's what I'm wondering. He said that... that was the offer they're making up there in Los Alamos.
That's quite remarkable. I'm not surprised that they're paying huge salaries. They've got a virtually unlimited budget. They've got a cost-plus contract with the government, which basically says, Halliburton says to the government, here are our costs, and you have to pay that, plus we get to mark this up 10, 12, 13%, whatever the contract calls for. Different ones have different percentages for our profit. And the government doesn't get to say, well, hey, wait a minute, that that cost is a little high, because Halliburton, you know, it's a no bid, non competitive cost plus a series of no bid, non competitive cost plus contracts.
Well, anyway, it sounds grafty to me.
Yeah.
But have you heard about Nisara? It's supposed to be some word made public this week from the National Economic Security and Reformation Act passed by the World Court in The Hague. February 20th, that is supposed to be announced this week, and it's kind of super amazing the things that they're providing with this law, zeroing out credit card balances, forgivenesses of mortgages, the U.S. Treasury bank system with new U.S. Treasury currency backed by precious metals.
Yeah, I've gotten a couple of emails about this, and I think it's a vanishing hitchhiker story, Roberta. It ain't going to happen. You know, a jubilee would be great. It's really what our country needs. You know, the old biblical jubilee where every 50 years, every 7 times 7, every 49 years, all debt was forgiven, all slaves were free, everything was equalized, and everybody started out over all over again.
But
it ain't going to happen.
For a paradigm shift, isn't that what we need?
Yeah, yeah.
They actually did do this, didn't they?
They actually did it. The ancient Israelites or Hebrews or Jews or whatever they were called back then actually did that. It's in the Bible. And one of the World Bank economists, whose name is escaping me at the moment, I wrote about this in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, actually. He wrote a book on recreating, on how to building a decent global economy, and he actually proposed that there should be a jubilee at least for third world nations, that there should be debt forgiveness, because we've basically hustled them into debt in so many ways. But anyhow, let me get back to this thing. That actually has happened in a few cases, but in most cases not. The only cases that I know of clear debt forgiveness have been when very large corporations have ripped off lots and lots of their stockholders and whatnot, and then the government comes in and says, we can't allow you to go down the tubes, so we will pay with tax dollars. We'll pick up the slack. And the biggest example of that, of course, was the savings and loan debacle. Neil Bush, for example, is involvement with the Silverado savings and loan and whatnot. But that's, you know, there's a jubilee for wealthy investors, but that's about it. Anyhow, George Bush on March 11th said over a million jobs were lost because of that attack. On the 16th of March, he said to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, we've overcome an attack on our economy, which affected our economy. They estimate over a million jobs were lost after the attacks of 9/11. Now, where did he get these numbers from? White House officials were contacted by the Bureau of National Affairs on March 19th, 3 days after George Bush, for the second time, made this claim that a million jobs were lost to 9/11, and asked, where did he get that number from? And they were, quote, unable to point to any specific information which supports a direct link between massive job losses and the attacks of 9/11, end quote. So they went and they said, you know, okay, well, how many jobs actually were lost as a result of 9/11? And Peter Batansky, the senior vice president of New York's Federal Reserve Bank, not exactly a liberal think tank here, told the BNA he was aware of only one study that examined job losses attributable to September 11. It was performed by the New York Federal Reserve Board. That study was limited to jobs lost in New York, but the study showed about 70,000 to 80,000 jobs lost by the end of 2000. But after that, they had started to bounce back. He said, I don't know how someone could measure jobs lost outside of New York and attribute them to the attacks. Treasury spokesman Robert R. Nichols says simple math shows that 78% of the 2.3 million jobs lost since December 2000 occurred in 2001, and 40% in the 90 days following 9/11. But, you know, part of this, you know, and he goes on to blame this to the recession we inherited, yes, from Clinton. They love to say that. Isn't that remarkable? It actually didn't start until 3 months after the Bush administration had taken power and had already started aggressively pushing their program for tax cuts for the rich as the cure to the nation's ills. But nonetheless, blame it on Clinton is the mantra of the right. David Bruska, chief economist at New York Bank economic consulting firm Fact and Opinion Economics, dismissed the president's statements that 9/11 was to blame for the loss of 1 million jobs. He said, and I quote, I would not touch those numbers with a pair of tongs. He goes on to say the Bush administration was just looking for a way to blame someone else for the job losses. If the president wants to blame the job losses on terrorism, that's fine, but they should be focusing on why the jobs aren't coming back. Interesting one. They made a lot of policy decisions since 9/11, but they can't tell anybody why their tax cuts and other policies aren't working. No, they can't. Got a quote for you from Richard Clark from the testimony tomorrow, yesterday. I'll play it right after this break. Stick around. Tom Hartman here, 20 minutes past the hour.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. New analysis from researchers at the University of California at Berkeley portend a troublesome future for workers in Silicon Valley. They predict 1 in 6 current high-tech jobs in the Valley could be sent overseas in the coming years. For the total U.S. workforce, the risk of being outsourced is 1 in 10. They also forecast a rise in offshoring for more clerical-type work, like jobs involving paralegal skills or the processing of medical and insurance claims.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
For 35 years, John Kerry's fought for his country.
We need to get some things done in this country. Affordable health care, rolling back tax cuts for the wealthy, really investing in our kids. That's why I'm running for president.
John Kerry, the military experience to defend America. A new plan to create jobs and put our economy back on track.
I'm John Kerry, and I approve this message because it's time to put opportunity in the hands of all Americans.
John Kerry, a new direction for...
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis Digilink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman.
Talking to George Bush, I'll tell you that. You go through the list of people that this administration has fired for telling the truth, from Lawrence Lindsay, their the budget director who gave some factual the various generals and military folks who've talked about the cost of Iraq, the number of soldiers that we needed. It just goes on and on and on. Just absolutely amazing. Tom Hartman here, back with you, 25 minutes past the hour. Military. Now, here's the story, and the story under this story is the one that I think is really important. This is in today's New York Times, or yesterday's New York Times, an article by Neil A. Lewis. Military was sold lead-tainted fabric for tents. Now, the military says the levels of lead are low enough that it's really not a problem. But there are many scientists who suggest, and this was the argument that was made back when they took lead out of gasoline, that there really isn't a threshold below which lead does not cause neurological damage. It may cause so little neurological damage that the consequences aren't obvious. You don't see an immediate 5-point drop in an IQ test. But there really is no such thing as a safe level of lead. And so anyhow, here's the article. Almost three-fourths, this is by Neil A. Lewis, almost three-fourths of the camouflage pattern tents, tarpaulins, and jeep covers used by the United States military throughout the world are made from fabric manufactured with toxic lead compounds that can cause a variety of illnesses, including cancer, according to undisputed evidence in a lawsuit being tried mostly behind closed doors in federal court. This is from the New York Times. While the chemicals, lead chromate, hexavalent chromium and trivalent chromium are prohibited by the military and the fabrics it buys, a Pentagon spokesman said last week that tests by the Army have shown that they are present in the tent fabric. Now, how did this thing come about? Turns out there's this law, and a fine law it is. It's called the False Claims Act, and it's sometimes known as the whistleblower's law. And basically what it says is if you know that we, the people, are being ripped off or harmed in some way, and you point it out in a way that brings about a prosecution by the federal government that results in fines to the malefactors, you get a piece of that action. The government can take control of the lawsuit, and you can get a piece of it. And there was this guy, his name is Mr. Ayers. Where's his first name? It's in here someplace. Keith Ayers. He lives in Virginia. And 14 months ago, he filed a citizen's complaint against Bonkode, his corporation, charging that it was secretly using lead chromate to lower its costs. And here is where we get to the nub of the matter. The conservative line is that there is nothing that a corporation can do, there's nothing that a government can do that a corporation can't do better and more efficiently. Because a corporation is guided by profits. And the traditional understanding that we've had in America since this country was founded in 1787, 1791, you say, that where the Bill of Rights was added, is since the 1700s, the understanding that we've had is that, no, in fact, there are many things the government does better than corporations and always will, because corporations exist to create profits, which is fine, but government exists to serve the people. And there's an appropriate place for serving the people. And that's what the conservative worldview just misses. It just completely misses it. No, let's give it to the corporations. And what do you end up with? You end up with lead in your tents. Because some corporation is trying to save some money. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. I'm going to tell you about what the lawyers had to say about this, what the government wanted to do about it. Right after this. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. 29 minutes past the hour.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Early this month, MCI finished the overhaul of its books from its WorldCom era, and the damage from the company's fraud-laden collapse in 2002 totals a record $74.4 billion. The restatement completely wipes profits off the books from 2000 onward. MCI attributes more than $14 billion directly to the financial misdeeds of previous executives now facing criminal charges. The rest of its loss, it says, is from depreciation tied to the ongoing slump in the telecom sector as a
pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
I'm Sarah Turner. An overwhelming majority of 8,000 Caterpillar workers voted to authorize a strike this week after 4 months of negotiations. 96% of United Auto Workers members at 7 local unions in Illinois, Pennsylvania, Colorado, and Tennessee voted to support a strike after their current contract expires at midnight on March 31st. Caterpillar announced they have contingency plans similar to what they used during the mid-1990s strike to replace the packaging, shipping, and distribution workers and make sure customers continue receiving their products on time.
More than 3,000 workers employed by a major corporate farmer in California stand to gain millions of dollars in back pay thanks to a federal judge's ruling. It involves the D'Arrigo Brothers Company of Salinas and its use of company buses to haul farm workers to and from vegetable fields in need of harvest. Travel to the fields typically takes an hour or longer each day. The companies refuse to pay the workers for the time they've spent on their buses. The judge says they should have been paid. He'll determine the damage award on April 5th.
UAW members are upset in Chicago. The majority of workers at a Ford Motor Company's Chicago assembly plant signed a petition to the UAW International calling for a new contract election. UAW Local 551 is claiming widespread voter fraud tainted their March 16th election, contending their voter ledger books didn't add up, the ballot box wasn't locked, and it was left in an unsecured location.
Tokyo's Board of Education says it will discipline teachers who displayed unpatriotic behavior at high school graduations earlier this month. The board approved controversial rules late last year that require all teachers to stand and sing Japan's national anthem anytime it's played at a school-related event. For the graduation ceremonies, the board reportedly sent inspectors to make sure teachers complied. At least 150 did not. There is a pending lawsuit challenging the rule, and for now the board will probably just warn the teachers about the consequences of further unpatriotic displays, although a second violation may mean dismissal. Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Last month's tepid employment report was bad enough. A total of 21,000 new jobs were created in February when the experts expected six times that number. But that only counts new full or part-time hires. The majority of job growth actually took place in the temp market, where 32,000 new jobs were reported for February. Higher growth in temping over long-term employment is troubling, even more so if sustained.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Probe.
Mississippi Delta was shining like a national guitar. I am following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War. I'm going to Graceland.
Yes, going to Graceland. This is an amazing country. You know, there is so much in the United States to see and do. There's so many extraordinary places. And no, I've never been to Graceland. There are days, well, like today. Here it is, a gray, rainy day, but it's 40 degrees now here in central Vermont, here in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic. And I just, you know, it's just a good day to be alive. It's an extraordinary thing. Anyhow, so here we've got this company that is using lead in the fabric that it's manufacturing for the camouflage pattern tents, tarpaulins, and jeep covers used by the United States military throughout the world. Again, here's the lead sentence in this story by Neil Lewis in the New York Times yesterday. Military was sold lead-tainted fabric for tents. Almost three-fourths of the camouflage pattern tents, tarpaulins, and jeep covers used by the United States military throughout the world are made from fabric manufactured with toxic lead compounds that can cause a variety of illnesses, including cancer. According to undisputed evidence, the corporation is not saying it ain't true. In a lawsuit being tried mostly behind closed doors in federal court. Now, the lawyers who brought this case and the guy who is suing are saying this is such a breach of the public trust and this is going to cause so much harm, or has the potential to cause so much harm to our soldiers, our men and women in uniform, that this corporation should pay millions of dollars so that it never does this again. Hit them with a fine, 20, 30 million bucks. So that other companies looking at this will say, we're not going to defraud the government like that. But the government says, no. Keep in mind, the government lawyers are actually arguing the case. This guy, Keith Ayers, who brought the lawsuit initially, had to hand it off to the United States government, to the Department of Justice, presumably. And they're then prosecuting this company. And Mike Bothwell, a Georgia lawyer who helped Ayers put together the lawsuit here, he says this was a massive fraud on the military with the potential for serious illness. But then he goes on to say that the Justice Department contacted him and they said, you know, we're not going to ask for a lot of money in this case from this corporation. Now, why? Because they didn't want to put the company out of business. Because it's a defense contractor. Here's the actual quote. They told me flat out, I'm reading from the New York Times. They told me flat out, Mr. Bothwell said, that if a substantially higher penalty were to be imposed, Stonebridge Partners LP, the White Plains investment company that owns Bondcoat, will just bankrupt Bondcoat and put it out of business. So, you know, the corporation basically played hardball with the government. The government blinked. Now, my response to that would be fine. You know, if they bankrupt it and it goes out of business, Now there's an opportunity for some other company to come in and say, hey, we can make fabric. This isn't rocket science. Well, I mean, even rocket science can be done by another company, right? But, I mean, you know, this is not like, you know, landing humans on Neptune or something. I mean, think of something really hyperbolic here. I mean, I'm sure lots of companies can figure out how to make fabric for tents and camouflage and whatnot. And it really, you know, just gets back down to the issue of what is the appropriate role of government? And what do you do with a rogue corporation? Corporations claim that they should have the rights to be persons. Nike claiming before the Supreme Court earlier this year, in April of this year, claiming that they had the right to lie. Because you and I have the right to lie. Except when we're under oath, as Condoleezza Rice knows so well. She doesn't want to go before the commission in public under oath. But she will tell Tom Brokaw and the nation an explicit lie, as she did last night on NBC News. So we all have the right to lie. There's no penalty to her for doing that other than the possibility, the very remote possibility, that NBC News might tonight go on the air and say, you know, can you imagine Tom Brokaw looking at his viewers and saying, you know, last night on the news, I had Condoleezza Rice on here live, and we interviewed her, and she said that the administration had increased funding for counterterrorism activities, but that was a lie. They actually cut funding for counterterrorism activities. They actually cut out the funding the Clinton administration put in, you know, blah, blah, as I documented in the first hour of the program. I don't think he's going to do it. I intend to watch NBC Evening News tonight just to see. But I just can't imagine it happening, which is a really sad commentary on the state of affairs. But, you know, you have to keep in mind, NBC News is owned by General Electric, one of the largest defense contractors in the world, and on it goes. Oh, he's sounding like a conspiracy theorist. No, it's, you know, people look out for their own interests. It's just, you know, it's human nature. So what do you do with a rogue corporation? Well, corporations are going to claim that they have human rights. They have the right to lie, because humans have the right to lie. That they have Fourth Amendment privacy rights. You had one of the nation's largest chemical companies. The EPA dropped in and said, hi, we'd like to do a surprise inspection. We heard from a whistleblower that you are polluting the atmosphere. And the company said, sorry, you can't. We have a Fourth Amendment right to privacy. Although our employees surrender that right when they step onto our private property and we can test their bodily fluids and we can listen in on their telephone conversations and we can videotape them without their knowledge and we can watch their keystrokes on their computers. While they have no right to privacy, the humans who work for us, the corporation itself has a Fourth Amendment right to privacy. Dow Chemical actually argued that before the United States Supreme Court and won. And so, you know, corporations say, hey, we've got rights of persons. Walmart comes into a community. The community doesn't want them there. They say, hey, the 14th Amendment says no person shall be denied equal access, equal protection under the law. The 14th Amendment, the Unequal Protection Clause. The one I wrote a book about, Unequal Protection. And corporations, you know, they come in here, Walmart or whatever, and they say, this community is discriminating against us. You know, the 14th Amendment, which was written to free the slaves, says you can't do that. This is crazy. I mean, they're successful in doing it, but it's crazy. You know, we need to change these rules. I mean, these are the rules of the game, and they're not right. Human beings, you know, human rights should be for human beings. Pure and simple. Very straightforward. Human rights should be for human beings, and not for the artificial creations of human beings. As it stands right now, governments do not have human rights. They are an institution. They don't have human rights. They shouldn't. Churches don't have human rights. They are an institution. They shouldn't. Unions don't have human rights. They shouldn't. They're an institution. But for some weird reason, because of a bizarre misstatement of an 1886 Supreme Court case, corporations have human rights. Does that make sense to you? Anyhow, I'm saying all this by way of getting around to the GOP strategy on jobs, which is what I wanted to talk about here for just a minute. But I did get into this thing here. I got off on Condi Rice for a second, and Ryan in Lubbock, Texas is on the line. Hey, Ryan, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, sir. How you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
Great. Well, I was calling a couple reasons. First of all, I'd missed the NBC program last night, and I was wanting you to educate me as I flipped through the dial on my Sirius radio and wanted to hear what you had to say.
Here she is.
The president increased counterterrorism funding several-fold in order to be more aggressive.
And in fact, that's simply not the case. So the president cut counterterrorism funding.
Well, I do not have the budgets in front of me, but I know that I've seen statements issued that said that they increased it fivefold after he was in office because he was tired of, quote, swatting at flies. And
yeah, after 2001. Sure.
After 2001?
Yeah.
I'm not calling to prove you wrong. I was just calling to get some information.
Yeah.
But so that was in 2001 before 9/11?
Yeah, before 9/11, the administration submitted a budget that specifically cut funding for counterterrorism, specifically cut it, and also cut the block grants for communities funding on counterterrorism. Just, you know,
was that budget approved?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yep.
Well, now to my second reason for calling. I wanted to ask you for your help and leadership on this whole 9/11 commission because it's quickly being derailed by partisan interests. And I think the important thing to realize is that you and I alike would have never dreamed before 9/11 that something as horrible as that would have happened. And I think it's really unhealthy for everyone in America to start pointing fingers. And I understand there's a lot of emotions involved and it was a horrible tragedy, but it wasn't anyone's fault in particular, and we all just need to work together to come up with a strategy so it doesn't happen again. Now,
you know, I don't disagree with your sentiment. I certainly the Republicans are trying very, very hard to essentially say the same thing you are. You know, now that it looks like Bush dropped the ball, but it also looks like Clinton dropped the ball. I mean, you know, let's
absolutely
cut them some slack. But here's the actual quote, by the way. I just found this. What Condoleezza Rice said, which I just played for you, is, as I said, a lie. And I'm very reluctant to use that word, but I have no other way of saying it. Here's what the New York Times reported on February 28th of 2002. The Bush White House did not endorse FBI requests for $58 million for 100. See, these were requests that the Clinton administration had put in the previous budget, and they were carrying forward. These were the suggestions, right? The Bush White House did not endorse FBI requests for $58 million for 149 new counterterrorism field agents, 200 intelligence analysts, and 54 additional translators. And they proposed a $65 million cut for the program that gives state and local counterterrorism grants. So that's what's actually happened. And then you get Condi Rice going on NBC News last night saying
the president increased counterterrorism funding several-fold in order to be more aggressive.
Didn't happen. So this is, I mean, the whole 9/11 commission is looking at what happened before 9/11. That's the context for all this. And
sure.
No, he didn't.
Well, I mean,
he cut it.
You know, you can talk about cuts, and I don't know. You're a smart man. You know there's reasons behind every action, and I don't know why they chose to.
They had a tax cut coming. They had this huge tax cut for the rich coming, and they were saying, "Hey, we don't need all this stuff." They were aggressively shifting money out of counterterrorism and similar programs, and what they called soft programs, and moving it into what they call hard programs like missile defense, which Don Rumsfeld had been a lobbyist for before he became Secretary of Defense.
Well,
that's what was going on.
You know,
it's not a secret.
Fairness, that's your opinion, but no one has come out to say that's why these cuts were.
Yeah, all you got to do is go back and read their numbers. You know, it's very straightforward. You can it's right there. Ryan, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. And Mike in Tampa is on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? It's first time listening to you. I've got this Sirius satellite radio, and I kind of like it.
Amazing thing, isn't it?
Yeah, the reason I wanted to turn you on and listen to you, I wanted to say something about, well, what you just said. I'd read the same thing before in the papers about the Bush administration cutting back on Clinton's request for increased funding on counterterrorism.
Right.
So I'm sure that's true. I've known that for over a year. I've known it for quite a while.
Yeah, it was reported almost 2 years ago in the New York Times.
My opinion is Clinton dropped the ball on this because he did not aggressively. I think he had all good intentions. I think he took it very seriously, but he couldn't pull the trigger on decisions, which is where I see he made a mistake.
Hang on just a second, Mike. Hey, Mike, hold it just a second there. You know, you say Clinton couldn't pull the trigger on the decision. Did you see Sandy Berger's testimony yesterday?
Yeah, I know Clinton said he put a kill Osama bin Laden at all costs.
Well, not only that, I mean, they sent 60 cruise missiles in there.
And I like Clinton, but I think the buck stops there. They didn't get him for whatever reason. The CIA says that they had a miscommunication between the White House and, you know, the CIA.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and I'm just trying to be fair to both sides. And with Clinton being president, you know, I think he's the commander-in-chief. The buck stops there.
Yeah.
Same thing with Bush, though. I believe 100% what Mr. Clark said about Bush's priorities being elsewhere. Bush said as much in his book. Well, the book was written, Bush at War.
Yeah, Carl Woodward.
He said that he wasn't focused on terrorism. He didn't have a sense of urgency about it.
Yeah.
That's all Clark is saying right now.
Yeah, by and large. They thought that, you know, missile defense and you know, fighting the Cold War and going after Iraq were more important than fighting terrorism.
To be honest, I wouldn't fault them for that. If they would just come forward and admit it and say, we thought the bigger threat was here, but obviously it wasn't. We made a mistake, but, you know, we can do better in the future doing these things. But they'll never say that. We both know that.
Well, and that's the tragedy. Let me just share with you what Clark said. And then we're just about out of time here. So go ahead with your question, your comment.
Very quick. I just want to know, the Bush administration accused Clark of lying. If he's lying, isn't it very simple to prove it? I mean, he's under oath. He's listed times and places.
Oh, they can put him in prison if he's lying. He's under oath. You're absolutely right. No, that's why all these Bush administration attacks on Clark are attacks on his character and his motives rather than his statements, because his statements are factual.
They can point out the lie and then hang him to the wall on it.
Yeah, but they're not doing that. And, in fact, Condi Rice won't even go and testify in under oath before the commission. She'd rather testify before NBC News and actually tell things that are factual lies.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Ryan. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Harmon radio program, 10 minutes before the hour. What is the GOP strategy on jobs? We'll get to that in just a moment. Stick around.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Ski resorts could be left high and dry in a warmer climate. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. If forecasts for global warming are correct, many of Europe's most popular ski resorts are likely to go bankrupt in the next few decades. That's according to a report presented in December at the World Conference on Sport and Environment. The report says the ski season will grow shorter and the snow line will move higher into the mountains. In Switzerland, as many as 60% of all ski resorts could close in the next 30 to 50 years. One researcher says the scenario is not quite so bleak in North America. Daniel Scott is a geographer at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, and he studies recreation and tourism. He says ski resorts in eastern North America will face warming temperatures and less snow, but he says they're better equipped than European resorts to deal with the problem.
In Europe, they don't have the sort of extensive snowmaking systems that we do have here in eastern North America, where every ski area has almost 100% coverage of their skiable terrain in snowmaking.
Scott says snowmaking is not as widespread at resorts in western states and provinces, and it's not clear how they'll deal with warmer winters. Scott says resorts that try to compensate for a shortage of natural snow will see expenses go up.
They'll have to make more snow, which will have costs associated with it. I think the average ski area in the Northeast is something like $750,000 U.S. a year. So it's a substantial, you know, amount of money. And if you're doubling the amount of snow that you have to make, well, your costs go up accordingly.
Scott says the news about Europe's ski resorts has drawn a lot of attention, and many resort owners are now looking at their abilities to weather environmental change. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. The pill that will help you escape the matrix, the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894. Ben Birch is on the line. Ben runs WhiteRoseSociety.org, which is the place where you can listen to this program 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, any of our shows from the last 3 weeks. You can find it as a link, archives off TomHartman.com, or go right to WhiteRoseSociety.org. Hey, Ben, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. You know, your previous caller who said that none of us could have imagined what happened on 9/11.
He was repeating the Republican mantra right now.
Well, I'm here to tell you that it was imagined.
Oh, it was reported all the way back to 1998. There were reports in the press about, well, in fact, at Davos in Switzerland, they were doing security against the possibility of terrorists hijacking planes and crashing them into the buildings.
Yes, not only was Scientific American reporting on this as a threat to nuclear power stations in February of 2001. I was on the Mike Malloy show back then in June of 2001, and we were discussing the strategic missile defense. And I said, you know, Mike, a ballistic missile is an extraordinarily difficult piece of equipment to get working, and I've worked on rocket systems. It is very unlikely that any terrorist would try to build one or succeed in building one if they tried. And Mike said, what do you think terrorists are most likely to do? And I said, borrow or steal an aircraft and crash it into a target of high value.
Yeah, it ain't rocket science. And then there you were, what, 3 months before 9/11?
That's right. This was imagined.
Yeah.
I imagined it. You know, mind you, I didn't think they'd use a target of symbolic significance like the Pentagon or the World Trade Center. I imagined Institute West Virginia.
Well, actually, if you go back, and we've gone through this in previous programs, the national security directives that went to the president actually suggested that there could be, you know, that Washington, D.C. could be on a target list that had to do with hijacked airplanes. And so, of course, yesterday he goes on TV, or day before yesterday, and says, well, we never imagined New York City would be hit. And, you know, it's true. Ben, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. Telling the truth, the multinational corporations don't want you to know. It's here the family is broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA. You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii. The Bush administration's failure to prevent the September 11th attacks came under even fiercer scrutiny yesterday when it emerged that two veteran CIA counterterrorism experts were so frustrated in the summer of 2001 that they considered resigning and making public their fears about an imminent terrorist strike against U.S. targets. The shocking revelation showed that John McLaughlin, deputy to the CIA director George Tenet, had told the panel he was too worried that not enough was being done. According to this latest report, Mr. McLaughlin had felt a great tension, especially in June in July of 2001, between the incoming Bush's team need to get a grip on the terrorism issue and his own sense of urgency about the danger. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry wrapped up his vacation in Sun Valley on Wednesday and flew back to Washington to accept a key union endorsement and rally former rival Howard Dean and other party leaders behind his candidacy. Kerry is meeting privately Thursday with members of the Democratic National Committee, then speaking to the National Newspaper Publishers Association. The Democratic chiefs come together Thursday night to recognize Kerry as the new leader of the party and raise more than $10 million for the DNC's effort to defeat Bush. Kerry will be joined by former Presidents Carter and Clinton, 2000 Democratic nominee Al Gore, Democratic National Committee Chairman Terry McAuliffe, and all of his primary rivals except Dennis Kucinich and Carol Moseley Brown. Polls show most voters unhappy about Bush's handling of the economy and over his course in Iraq, and 2 days of public testimony before the independent commission investigating the September 11th, 2001 attacks, along with the release earlier this week of a critical book by the president's former top counterterrorism advisor, Richard Clark, that Bush slighted the war against terror to focus on Iraq. dovetails so closely with so many Democratic criticisms of the president that some party strategists believe this week's events could mark a turning point in public attitudes about the administration's national security record. Their entire presidency is based on whatever leadership they can point to as a result of September 11th, said one senior Democratic strategist familiar with the thinking inside the campaign of Massachusetts Senator John F. Kerry. If the credibility of that leadership is questioned, his entire presidency hangs in the balance.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Chocoholics seeking to indulge their passion this Easter will appreciate a British hotel chain's diet-busting chocolate sandwich, which boasts the added attraction of being dipped in batter and deep-fried. Ramona Jarvis introduced the delicacy last month and said on Wednesday the calorie-heavy dish had become the fastest-selling dessert on its menu. We were surprised it has become so popular, although it is very tasty, said the chain's director of food and beverages, Debbie Walter. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
I have exciting news for those of you who worry that American industry is losing its creative edge. America West Airlines has just implemented a stunning innovation that is certain to revive this sagging industry and assure profits, new jobs, and happy skies as far as the horizon extends. The innovation? Ads on tray tables. Yes, just when you thought that surely there was not another space left anywhere in our country for corporations to put more ads, along comes America West to slap you right in the face with an ad every time you flip down your tray table on one of its flights. The airline is selling ads to cover every tray top on each of its planes, and it already has Visa, Mercedes-Benz, and Bank of America on board for this flighty idea. Advertisers pay $3,300 per plane to hawk their stuff via tray tables to what they call a captive audience. Indeed, an audience literally strapped to its seats. Tray tables are said to be the brainstorm of marketeer Nick Pagic. Seems more like a slight breeze than a brainstorm to me, but this is what passes for innovation in corporate America today. Pagic gushes that ads on tray tops will, quote, be one of the most powerful and influential media. Oh, sure, I'm going to rush off the plane and buy a Mercedes because of an ad on my tray table. No wonder our economy is in trouble. If you think you can escape by flying on some other carrier, America West marketing honcho warns that it seems to be a no-brainer for other airlines to follow suit once we've blazed the trail. It's enough to make you reach for the barf bag. They admit the tray table ads are just a start, as airlines seek other ways to jack up their revenues. Yeah, why not run a constant stream of ads over the PA system, or start charging for pillows, or assessing a fee for those who want to have an oxygen mask available to them? This is Jim Hightower saying, or here's a loopy idea. Why not improve service so flying becomes a pleasant experience rather than an ordeal?
I'll just see who that is then.
Oh no! South American killer bees! They're going for my eyes!
A swarm of killer bees. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a better looking roof with Plitanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Other roof sheathing materials can swell at the edges, creating an unsightly checkerboard pattern under your shingles. Plitanium roofs provide a more uniform surface. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
At that speed, definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot, you're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool
hot
it really is, visit Xerox.com/office.
Calling for a wrap.
rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Eureka, I was right! I knew it!
One of our alert listeners was kind enough to call and tell Louise, hey, go check this story, Toronto Star, an article by Stephen Hartso in the Associated Press. Corn sweetener linked to obesity. I have been saying this for a year on this program. Those of you who have been listening know this, that it seems to me that there's just an absolute correspondence between the appearance of high fructose corn syrup, which, by the way, is the result of massive government subsidies to five very large corporations, huge multinational corporations that control a massive percentage of America's agriculture. These corporations, you'll remember, you know, Willie Nelson doing Farm Aid back in the 80s. These corporations came in and they wiped out the family farms, and they got these billions of dollars in agricultural subsidies to do what? To plant corn. And this corn is being used to make corn syrup, that is a sweetener. And because it's subsidized by our tax dollars, it's cheaper than cane sugar, which is only grown in the southern part of Florida. I don't think, maybe down in Texas, but I don't believe that there's any place else in the United States that they actually grow cane sugar. And so we have to import that, you know, Caribbean countries and whatnot. And actually they grow it in Hawaii as well. But anyhow, the point is that corn sweetener became cheaper, and so all of a sudden, you know, Coke changed their formula. That was the whole thing with the new Coke, you know, and now even Coke Classic still, you know, they changed it from cane sugar to corn syrup. And I said, and I've been saying this for a decade, that's when people started getting fat. Not just when Coke did it, but when the entire industry shifted from cane sugar to corn syrup, suddenly something happened. And sure enough. Here it is. It's going to be published in the April issue of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. An article basically saying what I've been saying all along. They say the reason why is because fructose doesn't trigger responses in hormones that regulate energy use and appetite the way that regular sugar does. It's more likely, therefore, to be converted into fat. Which raises the question, and I'm going to bring this up again tomorrow on the program. I just wanted to mention it briefly here, but raises the question, should the corporations that are bringing us this change in our food supply that has created an epidemic of obesity in the United States be held to account? Could it be that the reason why legislation was passed by the House of Representatives last week to shield food corporations from lawsuits by people who are the victims of obesity, or some would say who have victimized themselves by eating too much, I mean, that's the argument. Should they be able to say, hey, food companies, did you know about that? What did you know and when did you know it? Anyhow, I'm going to do a little more research on this, and we'll get into that tomorrow. I think this is a fascinating topic. The Bush administration resorts to lies about 9/11. I want to share with you Richard Clark's opening comment before the 9/11 Commission. And the question in my mind that this raised is, why is it now some 900 and some odd days, nearly 3 years after 9/11, 901 days since George Bush proclaimed Osama bin Laden dead or alive, why is it that in all that time nobody in the administration has said this? What Richard Clark came out and said yesterday. Now, it sounds a little bit distorted, but I'll give advance notice. This isn't the highest quality audio, but you can get what he's saying, I think, quite clearly.
I also welcome the hearings because it is finally a forum where I can apologize to the loved ones of the victims of 9/11, to them who are here in the room, to those who are watching on television. Your government failed you.
Your government failed you.
Those entrusted with protecting you failed you. And I failed you.
I failed you, he says.
We tried hard, but that doesn't matter because we failed. And for that failure, I would ask, once all the facts are out, for your understanding and for your forgiveness.
I would ask for your understanding and for your forgiveness, says Richard Clark, a man who lost friends in 9/11, who saw it coming, as it were, who is furious with this administration for not carrying on with the Clinton administration's aggressive prosecution of Osama bin Laden. Bill Clinton threw 60 missiles at bin Laden trying to kill him. Apparently, bin Laden got out of the way early, a matter of hours early, because he was tipped off by Pakistani intelligence. That's what, you know, that's the best guess. Clinton was, you know, and what happened when he did it? The great right-wing echo machine across America said, he's trying to distract us from Monica. We want to talk about what happened in the White House that day with that young lady. He's trying to wag the dog. They even made a movie, Wag the Dog, you know? It was, you know, thinly concealed. Amazing. This from the Daily, the misleader.org. The Daily Mislead. This is a great thing. If you don't subscribe to this, I recommend you sign up for it. On the internet, Misleader, misleader.org. With President Bush's former top counterterrorism expert, Richard Clark, issuing well-documented criticisms of the White House's failure to defend America, the administration has resorted to outright lies and distortions about its own record. The president himself once tried to deflect criticism, saying, quote, had my administration had any information the terrorists were going to attack New York City on September the 11th, end quote. A statement designed to deflect attention from the specific warnings that he personally received outlining an imminent al-Qaeda attack that could involve hijack airplanes being used as missiles. Here are four other explicit lies that the administration has told over the last few days. I mean, these guys are just spinning this as hard and as fast as they can. Lie number one. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice claimed that Clark, quote, chose not to, end quote, voice his concerns about the administration's counterterrorism policy. But Clark sent an urgent memo to Rice in January of 2001. This is part of the record. Asking for a cabinet-level meeting about an imminent al-Qaeda attack. An imminent al-Qaeda attack. The White House itself admits top Bush officials rejected Clark's request, saying they, quote, did not need to have a formal meeting to discuss the threat, end quote. Lie number two. White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan yesterday denied Clark's charge that the president ordered the Pentagon to begin drafting plans to invade Iraq immediately after 9/11. But according to the Washington Post, quote, 6 days after the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, President Bush signed a 2.5-page document that directed the Pentagon to begin planning military options for an invasion of Iraq, end quote. Now, this was published in the Washington Post on January 12th of last year, a year and a half ago. We have known this. America has known this. The world has known this. That 6 days after 9/11, President Bush signed a 2.5-page document that directed the Pentagon to begin planning military options for an invasion of Iraq. This was corroborated by a September 2002 CBS News report, which reported that immediately after 9/11, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld told, quote, this is quoting CBS now, told aides to come up with a plan for striking Iraq, end quote. And that report from CBS News was published, or was, you know, said, or yeah, electronic media doesn't publish, so I suppose you could say it was published, but it was in September of 2002. It was shared with the nation. Lie number three, Deputy National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley, This is Rice's assistant. Denied Clark's charge that there was an imminent domestic threat against America from al-Qaeda, saying, quote, all the chatter before 9/11 was of an attack, a potential al-Qaeda attack overseas, end quote. But, according to the bipartisan congressional report on 9/11, and I quote, in May 2001, the intelligence community obtained a report that bin Laden supporters were planning to infiltrate the United States to carry out a terrorist organization operation using high explosives, end quote. That report was included in an intelligence report for senior government officials in August of 2001. But here you have Rice's assistant, Stephen Hadley, saying, oh, no, we were told it was a foreign threat that al-Qaeda represented to the United States. But a month before 9/11, in August of 2001, in this report was given to the president and given to Rice that said that in May, 3 months earlier, in May of 2001, the intelligence community obtained a report that bin Laden supporters were planning to infiltrate the United States to carry out a terrorist operation using high explosives. That's a verbatim quote from the report that was given to the president and to Condoleezza Rice. Lie number four, Bush National Security spokesman Jim Wilkinson claimed, quote, it was this president who expedited the deployment of the armed predator, end quote. But according to Newsweek, it was the Bush administration who, quote, elected not to relaunch the Predator, end quote, and who did not deploy the new armed version of it, despite the military having successfully tested an armed Predator throughout the first half of 2001. They didn't get that thing out until after 9/11. They just sat on it. No big deal. Missile defense is more important. Tax cuts for the rich are more important. Huge boondoggle programs, corporate welfare, more important. Covering the breast of the naked statue in the Justice Department, more important than tracking down the terrorists. It's a sad day in America. It really is when the administration has to resort to just plain old flat-out lies like this. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. Chris in New Mexico, I see you're on the line there. Hang on, we got a break here, and we'll pick up your call right on the other side of this. We'll talk more about what's going on with Dick Clark and the Bush administration. Tom Hartman with you, 20 minutes past the hour.
You.
What?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, okay. Can you tell me who Louis Armstrong was?
He was the first guy on the moon.
Mm.
You know, one small step for man.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org, because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance and Armstrong's horn. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Jobs lost, 2.4 million. Federal deficit, $455 billion. War in Iraq, 9,000 human lives. Friends left at the United Nations, 3. America's future, bankrupt.
The time is now. Take our country back.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hart.
Come on and take a walk with me through this green and growing land. Walk through the meadows and the mountains and the sand. Walk through the valleys and the rivers and the plains. Walk through the sun and walk through the rain. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. All her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom. Glory shall rest on us all.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman for Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Madison and Jefferson, not from some right-wing think tank or the Republican National Committee or the daily memo from Roger Ailes. Anyhow, welcome back. Tom Hartman here. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Not a great deal, Tom. How are you?
Good.
Good. Am I wrong if radio show that Richard Clark lied in his testimony? In other words, perjured himself. Isn't that legal slander? Couldn't he have basis for a pretty big lawsuit in that case?
If he said that about you, Chris, you would have the basis for a lawsuit. But Richard Clark, by publishing his book, became what's called a public figure.
And yeah, but what he said in his testimony was under oath.
Sure. But still, you know, all Limbaugh or anybody else, all anybody could say, you know, it's just like my saying, hey, Condoleezza Rice lied. I mean, I can say, I believe it's true. Here's the evidence that it's true. She could come back and say, you know, if she was a private citizen, she could come back and say, okay, now you have to prove that it's true in a court of law. You know, that's how it works. These are public figures.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Condoleezza Rice is refusing to testify under oath precisely because she's been on NBC and CNN and Fox And if she went under oath, she'd have to refute her own statements on television. I really think so.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it's very straightforward. All they'd have to do is to impeach her, as it were. I mean, to show the lie.
Yeah.
You say, Dr. Rice, you said so and so on such and such a time. Is that true? And she would have to say no. It's just that simple.
Take care,
Chris. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Paul in Upland, California, is on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for taking my call, Tom. I've been listening to this 9/11 commission, kind of sobering, but it's really, it just seems like I've heard this before. I have heard all of this before, whether I've read it or seen it or heard it. It's been there before. And I find it funny, most of the people that I end up talking to about this whole mess seem to say, well, maybe this, you know, all this coming out in the press and the government going and showing this on television and saying, you know, hey, we messed up. Well, okay, we messed up. But if anybody dared to read a Michael Moore book or, say, an Al Franken book or, you know, pretty much anything that didn't come out of Hannity or O'Reilly, they would have heard this.
Yeah, well, in fact, what amazed me is how the first day of the hearings that I heard, and apparently these things have been going on for a while. I don't know if they've been on C-SPAN before, but you know, the whole country started paying attention after the Sunday CBS 60 Minutes. But the first day of the hearings that I saw was just softballs. I mean, you know, it was just softballs. I mean, they didn't ask Colin Powell any hard questions.
Well, you've also got a bipartisan commission that obviously you're looking at. What you're looking on the screen to see R or D.
Yeah,
and what are they going to say?
Well, and these guys have their future careers to concern themselves with and all that kind of thing. But, you know, I don't know. It's got to be a really difficult one for these guys too, because they and I use the word generically because there's women on the commission as well. But they really do want the truth to come out ultimately, and yet at the same time, they don't want to appear to be partisan. They don't want to appear to be, you know, the dogs of war, the attack dogs that Clark said was coming. And so they're trying to do this dance in a way that'll have the highest credibility and get the story out most effectively. And it's a tough job. It's a really tough job for them. But you know, they're not doing it the way that I would do it. But then, you know, I probably wouldn't have been asked to be on the commission. Paul, thanks for the call and the comments. Well said. Who's going to endorse John Kerry today? We'll get to that. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
When Bush got into the driver's seat, he took over the largest surplus in American history and turned that surplus into the largest deficit in history. The U.S. economy has lost 3.3 million jobs, the most since the Great Depression. Then Bush drove us into war with Iraq. We're losing lives. We're hemorrhaging money. And these costs are driving our country closer to bankruptcy. Just where does George Bush think he's taking?
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. An overwhelming majority of 8,000 Caterpillar workers voted to authorize a strike this week after 4 months of negotiations. 96% of United Auto Workers members at 7 local unions in Illinois, Pennsylvania, Colorado, and Tennessee voted to support a strike after their current contract expires at midnight on March 31st. Caterpillar announced they have contingency plans similar to what they used during the mid-1990s strike to replace the packaging, shipping, and distribution workers and make sure customers continue receiving their products on time.
More than 3,000 workers employed by a major corporate farmer in California stand to gain millions of dollars in back pay thanks to a federal judge's ruling. It involves the D'Arrigo Brothers Company of Salinas and its use of company buses to haul farm workers to and from vegetable fields in need of harvest. Travel to the fields typically takes an hour or longer each day. The companies refuse to pay the workers for the time they've spent on their buses. The judge says they should have been paid. He'll determine the damage award on April 5th.
UAW members are upset in Chicago. The majority of workers at a Ford Motor Company's Chicago assembly plant signed a petition to the UAW International calling for a new contract election. UAW Local 551 is claiming widespread voter fraud tainted their March 16th election, contending their voter ledger books didn't add up, the ballot box wasn't locked, and it was left in an unsecured location.
Tokyo's Board of Education says it will discipline teachers who displayed unpatriotic behavior at high school graduations earlier this month. The board approved controversial rules late last year that require all teachers to stand and sing Japan's national anthem anytime it's played at a school-related event. For the graduation ceremonies, the board reportedly sent inspectors to make sure teachers complied. At least 150 did not. There is a pending lawsuit challenging the rule, and for now the board will probably just warn the teachers about the consequences of further unpatriotic displays, although a second violation may mean dismissal. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Last month's tepid employment report was bad enough. A total of 21,000 new jobs were created in February when the experts expected six times that number. But that only counts new full or part-time hires. The majority of job growth actually took place in the temp market, where 32,000 new jobs were reported for February. Higher growth in temping over long-term employment is troubling, even more so if sustained.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hart.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. 27 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call. Howard Dean will make it official today, what he's been saying since he dropped out of the Democratic presidential race, reports the Associated Press, an article by Ross Snide. He wants John Kerry to be president. 34 members of Congress who have previously supported and endorsed Howard Dean are going to get together with Dean in Washington, D.C. today, and they're gonna collectively endorse John Kerry. Dean says, through many conversations with John Kerry, I've seen that we share a strong commitment to providing health care to every American, protecting our environment, fighting for women's reproductive freedom, and putting the 3 million Americans who lost their jobs during George Bush's presidency back to work, among other important issues. He goes on to say, I will do everything I can to help him win, and I hope you will join me in this endeavor. And notes that John Kerry's website is johnkerry.com. 1-866-889-8894. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good afternoon, Tom. The term that I like to use as far as discussing the way people are not paying attention to things is it's willful ignorance. They absolutely will avoid looking at things that conflict with their beliefs, which therefore would interrupt their whole reality.
Yeah, and I would say, Roy, isn't that just the nature of all of us? I mean, you know, certainly we all have those blind spots.
It definitely is.
And B, that may be a psychological survival mechanism. I mean, you know, do we necessarily? I mean, you know, what therefore? What's the therefore there?
Well, the therefore is that just like in the hearings yesterday and the day before, the pieces that I saw and true majority, the Iraqi CD that your buddy there in Massachusetts never watched, there's not one of those lies, there's not one of those things that has come out that hasn't been out if you dug around for it, but things happen so fast that you can't pay attention to the spin. you get so directed over this way, to that way, to this way, and it's, wait a second, I remember, oh, yeah.
Yeah, 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 it's, and
it happens so fast. I can kind of understand why when you're sitting there with the cameras on and you've got a hearing recorder going on that these people are so polite. But when I got so sick and tired of people telling Tenet what a great job he had done and how valuable his service was, I would have liked to have had one of them get righteously indignant and said, Mr. Tenet, you flat screwed up. How do you still have your job? How do you have enough nerve to cash your paycheck?
Yeah. Well, you know, there is a larger reality here, Roy, and that is that, you know, 9/11 happened and it was a terrible tragedy, and that was, you know, I mean, one of probably literally 10,000 different types of security issues that George Tenet has had to deal with in his tenure as director of the CIA under two administrations.
I would give him that.
So I don't have a problem with saying to the guy, if you really think he's done a good job, other than this, hey, you've done a good job, and now let's talk about this. I think the other reason why I don't think that you're hearing this kind of rhetoric out of the 9/11 Commission right now is that their mandate, their job, was not to determine who was at fault.
Right.
And it's
to come up with something in the future.
That's correct.
And they're
trying very hard not to walk into the area of who was at fault, because it's really not their job.
I think we
need to have somebody investigate whose fault it was. I'm all in favor of that. But the act of Congress that created this thing specifically said, number one, they won't have subpoena power. Number two, their job is to look into those events that led up to 9/11 in a way that will allow us to make plans and take actions in the future that will prevent this from happening again.
And it's just, it's so pervasive, and it's pervasive in any bureaucracy, but it has gotten so compounded.
Yeah.
All I can think of is the $80 million to find out what Bill Clinton was doing in the privacy of his office.
Yeah.
And yet.
Well, I'd say that wasn't privacy. Yeah. First of all, that was public territory. I just, you know, frankly, I have no problem with going after Bill Clinton for what he did with Monica in the Oval Office. The problem that I have is the way that they did it and how grossly out of proportion it got blown. No pun intended. You know,
the whole government would be shut down if we were investigating this administration.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, let's
the proportional.
Yeah, it was like running around the house with a double barrel shotgun, looking, you know, trying to get a fly.
Anyway, it's just that willful ignorance, though. I mean, and even when you get into conversations with people and you pull things out, like you were commenting on the Times article this morning. You can show people documented stuff. And what doesn't matter, George is a good Christian man. He wouldn't lie to me.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So,
and
anyway.
Yeah, people want to have their illusions. Roy, thanks for the call.
Hey, you bet. Have a good one.
Good point. Good point. Well made. Thank you. You too. Mildred Millie Jeffrey. I don't normally do eulogies here on the program, but this is a 93-year-old woman died Wednesday. Mildred Millie Jeffrey. Who was a really significant figure and just worth noting the passing of a good one here into the ether or up to heaven or however, you know, whatever it is. In the 1940s, she joined the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People and helped organize Americans for Democratic Action. She actually helped create that organization, the ADA. In the 1960s, she marched with Martin Luther King and James Meredith and other activists in the Deep South. In 1962, she arranged the use of an AFL-CIO owned camp on Lake Huron, which produced for a group of politically active University of Michigan students, including Tom Hayden and John Sinclair. That group issued what was called the Port Huron Statement, a document which became the manifesto for a new group called the Students for Democratic Society, SDS, which was the main student-based anti-war group in the 1960s. She also helped establish the National Women's Political Caucus, which was the political arm of NOW, the National Organization for Women, and worked very hard for the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment and legislation for child care and equal pay legislation. So a good one gone, Mildred Jeffrey, Millie Jeffrey. Tom Daschle, speaking of, Roy, your comments about willful ignorance. Tom Daschle apparently has come to the conclusion that we're not going to take it anymore. He's not just going to sit back and listen to this. On Tuesday, he made the following remarks, and I don't like to read somebody else's speech generally, but this is and this is sort of an edited version, but this is wonderful to hear the head of the Senate Democrats standing up and speaking like this. He says, "I want to talk this morning about a disturbing pattern of conduct by the people around President Bush. They seem to be willing to do anything for political purposes, regardless of the facts and regardless of what's right. Larry Lindsey, for instance, seems to have been fired as the president's economic advisor because he spoke honestly about the cost of the Iraq war. General Shinseki seems to have become a target when he spoke honestly about the number of troops that would be needed in Iraq. U.S. Park Police Chief Teresa Chambers was suspended from her job when she disclosed budget problems that left our nation's park unsafe, less safe. And Professor Elizabeth Blackburn was replaced on the Council on Bioethics because of her scientific views on stem cell research." Keep in mind, these are the words of Tom Daschle I'm sharing with you. He says, "When former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill stepped forward to criticize the Bush administration's Iraq policy, he was immediately ridiculed by the people around the president, and his credibility was attacked. Even worse, the administration launched a government investigation to see if Secretary O'Neill had improperly disclosed classified documents. He was, of course, exonerated, but the message was clear. If you speak freely, there will be consequences." Again, quoting Tom Daschle, "Ambassador Joseph Wilson also learned that lesson." I don't need to repeat the whole thing here, you know, about the outing of his wife, Valerie Plame. One of the things that, you know, a lot of people don't know, by the way, about that, was that Valerie Plame was one of the leaders of a corporation that was based in Washington, D.C., that had branch offices all around the world. There was a phony corporation set up by the CIA that went out around the world and offered to sell terrorists weapons of mass destruction. And they did this. These were sting operations. They were doing this in order to find out who and where the terrorists were who were trying to buy things like dirty bombs or build things like buy the raw materials for so they could build things like dirty bombs that could be used against the United States. This is the operation that Valerie Plame was one of the senior officials in. And the entire thing was shut down, was brought down as a result of Karl Rove or Scooter Libby or whoever it was in George Bush's office outing not just a CIA officer. They brought down an entire intelligence operation that was involved in counterterrorism. Anyhow, back to Tom Daschle's words. He says, "That was the first time in our history," speaking of Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame, he says, "that was the first time in our history, it's 227 years, the first time in our history, I believe, that the identity and safety of a CIA agent was disclosed for purely political purposes." Around the same time, Bush administration officials, again quoting Tom Daschle here, "around the same time Bush administration officials were endangering Ambassador Wilson's wife, they appeared to have been threatening another federal employee for trying to do his job. In recent weeks, Richard Foster, an actuary for the Department of Health and Human Services, has revealed that he was told he would be fired if he told Congress and the American people that the real cost of last year's Medicare bill." Now, as we mentioned in the first hour, it was his boss who said he would fire him, who had come from a $675,000 a year job as the head of a lobbying group for for-profit hospitals, Bill Frist's gig, and aggressively sought from Tommy Thompson the job of head of the agency within the United States government that runs Medicare, so that he could then help rewrite the laws on Medicare. And a week after the legislation passed, he quit that bureaucratic job that probably only paid $80,000, $90,000 a year and went back into private industry, where he's now working for a lobbying and law firm that works for Johnson & Johnson, a member of Pharma, the lobbying group that represents a hundred or more pharmaceutical companies and private hospitals that are going to make out like kings as a result of this thing. Anyhow, back to Tom Daschle. He says, think about those words. He would lose his job if he did his job. Speaking of Richard Foster, when did this become the standard for our government? Daschle asks. When did we become a government of intimidation? And now in today's newspapers, we see the latest example of how the people around the president react when faced with facts they want to avoid. I'm still quoting Tom Daschle here. It's a brilliant speech that he gave on Tuesday. He says, the White House's former lead counterterrorism advisor, Richard Clark, is under fierce attack for questioning the White House's record on combating terrorism. Mr. Clark has served in four White Houses, beginning with Ronald Reagan's administration. Now the White House seeks to destroy his reputation. The people around the president aren't answering his allegations. Instead, they're trying to use the same tactics they used against Paul O'Neill. They're trying to ridicule Mr. Clark and destroy his credibility and create any diversion possible to focus attention away from his serious allegations. And now here's where Tom Daschle really... I mean, this is the thing that so many of our public servants... And they really used to be public servants. I mean, you know, like I said, here in Vermont, the legislature meets from January to March, and that's it. If you run for the House or Senate here in Vermont, be prepared to sacrifice. It is not a high-paid job. They just recently raised their pay from around $7,000 a year to around $15,000 a year, and basically what that is to cover their expenses and their lost wages while they're here, you know, and this is not public service. Tom Daschle, he says, the purpose of government is not to make the president look good. This is really, you know, just such a key concept here. I mean, it's the administration, sure, that's the purpose of political parties, to make the president look good. The purpose of the Republican Party is to make him look good. Former Enron lobbyist and now RNC should be out there, you know, running around, going on and on about how wonderful George Bush. You know, his job is head of the Republican National Committee. That's what he should be doing, but not people who are employees of the government. Their job is not to do cover-ups. I mean, this is the message that we, the people, sent to Richard Nixon. Remember, the job of your employees, of Haldeman and Ehrlichman and John, the Attorney General, John Mitchell. Your job is not to cover up for the president. Your job is to do your job. You're answerable to us, we the people. And so here Tom Daschle just, you know, lays it out. The purpose of government isn't to make the president look good. It isn't to produce propaganda or misleading information. It is instead to do its best for the American people and to be accountable to the American people. The people around the president don't seem to believe that. They have crossed a line, perhaps several lines, that no government ought to cross. Daschle sums it up saying, we are now seeing abuses of power that cannot be tolerated. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Wakefield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Competition has driven some fisheries into deep trouble. An author sees a sustainable alternative. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Shrinking ocean fisheries are forcing ever tougher competition for what remains. Rod Fujita says that's pushed many fish species to dangerously low numbers. Fujita is the author of a new book called Heal the Ocean.
Nobody owns the fish, so nobody's responsible for them. And that sets up a vicious competition amongst individual fishermen and amongst countries to maximize their share of the catch, which is unspecified. They don't really know how much they're entitled to. So they build large fleets and subsidize them and try to create more powerful gear to catch as much as they can.
Fujita says high-tech fishing equipment and government subsidies are symptoms of a system gone awry, and he says blanket quotas for cod and other species only heated up the competition among fleets. Fujita says the answer lies in two bold steps, creating marine reserves where fishing is banned and in establishing specific catch allowances. He says each country and even individual fishing boats need to know how many fish they can catch each season.
The solution really is to specify use privileges for both individuals and countries so that people will know how much they're entitled to. It can be a percentage of the total allowable catch, for example. And once people have that share in hand, they can plan their businesses around that share rather than planning it around competition.
More than 90 of the world's fisheries are now covered by these individual quotas. British Columbia manages 25 Pacific fish species that way, and Fujita says the results have been good for conservation and for the fishing industry. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hart.
Like a leaf.
And welcome back. Every now and then we just get such cool bumper music. I just have to listen to another 10 seconds. It's just great stuff there. Thanks, Brad Walrod in New York City for editing it for us and pulling it together. Thanks to Louise for producing a program today. Always does a great job. Thanks to our sponsors and thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Let me remind you again, if you're in our chat room, the live chat that happens during the day while we're on the air, during the 3 hours of this program every day, that we're moving on Monday to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. So the SRV at the end of the URL is going to be Democratic, all lowercase, instead of what it is now. And I'll have a link on the homepage. We'll change that over the weekend. John Kerry apparently encountered something similar to what I did. Louise and I were both very active in the anti-war movement back in the 60s and early 70s. And knew our share, or ran into, or however you say it, our share of informers and provocateurs, and I could tell you stories that would curl your hair, and I'm not going to. But anyhow, here, a year-long FBI surveillance of John Kerry's anti... This was... We'll talk about John Kerry instead of me. A year-long FBI surveillance of John Kerry's anti-war activities in the early 1970s was a badge of honor, he says. An encroachment on civil liberties that has echoes in the presidential race. This according to a Kerry spokesman. Newly disclosed FBI files reveal that the Bureau's agents and informants closely followed Mr. Kerry and other leaders of Vietnam Veterans Against the War, infiltrating meetings, recording speeches, and filing reports to J. Edgar Hoover and Richard Nixon. The Nixon White House set out to destroy him because he was a credible voice speaking up for veterans, says a Kerry spokesman. And now we learn that J. Edgar Hoover was following his every move. You'd think we would have learned from that, but no, we get Ashcroft and the Patriot Act. It's all back around again. Time to make a change, my friends. Time to make a change. Get registered to vote and register a dozen other people. Get out there, get active. Thanks for listening today. Join us again tomorrow, same time, same place. Tom Hartman, I'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Had to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.